Once one said, a disappearing language is like a dying star. If you're looking at it from far away, it's just a dim light. But if you're closer to that, you can realize how violent the process is. Would you like to share a consideration about that with us?
It's a very important topic, of course, if we talk about disappearing language. Because every year, every day, there were certain dialect, or we call dialect, which is wrong way to put it, language, certain language disappeared. And in China, for example, we used to have a certain language called Nushu, meaning woman's speech, woman's language. And it's a secret code language in southern China, in one of the southern provinces between the tribal women. So they wrote down their, of course, very abused history between women, and then told each other their secret stories. Because the husband and their son, their father, the relation, you know, between them. And this Nushu woman's language died a few years ago when I think the last woman from that tribe was 80-something. And she was the last one who knows that language and still return. You know, she has all these notebooks, written those language, and basically women's history. And then she died, and then that was kind of official. That language died, women's language died in China. So if we think about those things, of course, you know, from a cultural preservance point of view, it's a huge deal. We don't want all the language to die, and eventually, language become empirical political situation. You know, it's Anglophone world these days. Okay, of course. But on the other hand, I must speak from, you know, nearly cruel, cold, nearly technical, scientific point of view. You know, language always evolve. They always die and reborn in another form. Certain language die, other type of new language being shaped. Our speech, our return language change all the time. And it's nearly biological. It's like how the Nuansen dies and the human monkey survived. It's such a long, immense, long historical evolution, you know. We politicized language as a certain identity or only identity for certain people. But no, culture has to be beyond that, beyond a specific language. Culture can be inherited and it can be transformed, even regenerated, even when that old culture, that old language died. So I don't believe that the language is the only identity or symbol of a certain culture. I really can't believe that. So, you know, we're no longer writing Shakespeare's style, but we created a different English these days. So I have these two opposite view, yeah. And I think maybe we shouldn't politicize everything, especially language is a political subject. But language doesn't only have a political identity. Yeah, it's also biological evolution too, and they will die and they reborn again, but in different form.
During your speech, we heard about the fact that the Chinese language is changing, and after the big massive change after the Mao revolutions, is anyway still changing. What do you think it reflects on the modern literature, and in particular case, what does it mean for you who are writing in English but probably still being anchored to the Chinese you used to speak before it changed?
Yeah, I mean, if you come from a culture like China or say India, you know, you immediately understand that different regions speak so many different dialects, and not everyone speaks the official language. Maybe, you know, the Beijing government, you know, that's a place everyone speaks perfect official Mandarin. But no, I grew up with two different dialects from my grandmother's tribe and my grandfather's village. So two dialects until I was 20 years old. Then I left my province, went to Beijing, study art. Then I began to speak Mandarin. And I write in this kind of so-called proper modern Mandarin written language with my book. But I never enjoyed writing in that kind of specific language because, as I mentioned before, the modern Mandarin was created and being supported, you know, after Mao's cultural movement, which means the written literature, the written language is very kind of full of kind of brutal slogans and, you know, short, direct, kind of street language which doesn't have this kind of poetic or sensual kind of resonance. It's very different. And I grew up reading better literature than the modern Chinese literature, which is very plain and brutal and male language. So I feel always very painful written in that kind of style, and somehow I never really found my style. Although I published so many books in Chinese, you know, and I don't find my English style either in my English writing, you know. So far I wrote 5 English novels. But I would say language is the first tour, but not the final tour, because the stuff you want to do with your book is sometimes a form, the strange character you created from certain kind of, you know, literary tradition, maybe not from China, maybe from France, or even from Latin American, some sort of literary tradition. So a book, a novel, contains so many layers, although the language is the first thing, the text, but even that you can play with it. So I play with broken English or odd Chinese in my writing. And you can see the form is quite kind of Western influenced, but then some characters, the Chinese peasant, or some are Western characters, especially in my recent book, I Am China, is a collection of the Western Eastern characters in a few global cities. So it's quite scattered around, you know, the idea is being transformed in such a form, and those kind of chaotic characters. It's not easy to define what it is, but if you have patience, you go through the text, and you think, wow, this writer doesn't want to suggest some sort of new linguistic reality or new kind of social reality, which is no longer singular or monoculture. So I'm trying to do those things, and I know not many writers want to do that because they challenge the quality of the language, or, you know, a certain language. But I think something I lose, but something I gain too, and I enjoy that naughty playing in my book. And I think I'm getting to a place which I will recognize, you know, a certain language belong to me as a writer.
We know that one of the main work by your correlator during the speech is stick out your tongue, which takes in consideration the Tibet situation, and it's a sort of different view compared to the Western idealistic view of the Tibet nowadays. So I was wondering if you want to just share your personal thought about the figure of Dalai Lama.
Mm.
What do you think about her?
Yeah, of course, you know, as most people in this world regard Dalai Lama as the spiritual leader from the East. And it's amazing also how the culture has been represented by figures rather than a complex tradition being attacked and being reformed again. And I guess with Dalai Lama's case, I think he is the representation of how he is and how he reformed his speech, especially recently. You know, the way when he mentioned the relationship between his culture and the mainland, and how he sees the political change in the world. So, I mean, I live in a world of no icons, so, you know, I think he is very amazing and interesting but complex human being. There's no saint in this world, and as long as we can, I think, treat him actually as a real human being, I think we are okay.